Hello and welcome to Old Brother, a podcast about Manchester / Salford's legendary musical institution, The Fall. Each week we invite on a guest to chat about their memories and interactions with the group. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and all the usual suspects, but we're hosted at shows.acast.com/old-brother. For episode 4 of season 4, we welcome an outstanding musician, singer and songwriter. We've played in such seminal bands as The Nerve Agents, Darker My Love, White Fence, Drinks, and at least one other you may have heard of. So, without further ado, it's our pleasure to welcome the marvellous Mr. Tim Presley.
Right, well, here we are. Episode 3 of Series 4. Episode 3 of Series 4. And very special guest tonight. We've got a dude tonight, Steve. Proper dude.
I want to hear all about it.
Yes, indeed. That'll be an interesting tale. So, without further ado, Mr. Tim Presley, how are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
Great, thank you. So, lunchtime there, where you are?
Yeah, just about. Right on the dot, 12 right. noon.
So, you were telling me a moment ago, you're in the desert.
It's near Joshua Tree.
Yeah. So, are you recording there or?
Kinda. I've mostly been painting, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The reason I ask if you're recording is because from what I can read, you're in about 7,000 different bands, aren't you, really?
Yeah, I think it's like 7,600.
Sorry, I'm exaggerating.
I'm not,
So how's that going? So which one have you been working on most recently?
With music?
Yes.
I've kind of done a pivot where I wasn't feeling very musical about a couple of years now, like around the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it like hurt my soul to even come to that realization, but I kind of pivoted to art and, I don't know. I'm just not feeling it. Music.
Are you worried?
I mean, I'm fucking worried. It's all I've ever done.
Are you worried? Yeah. It's not going to come back.
No, it's, I just don't want to, not to be cliche, I just don't want to force it, you know?
Yeah.
But I'm slowly trying to write music, but I'm at a different pace, I guess.
See, we were never afforded that luxury.
You guys are in the army.
Yeah. We had to have the next album out the next year.
Right, you're on a regimen.
Are we gonna jump? All right, if we're gonna jump in, then are we?
So, are we gonna fucking jump in?
Right, so our regular listeners will be keen to know the story. Yeah. Not that we ever normally pander to what we think they want to hear, because we end up talking about all kinds. But I think you should probably tell the story of how you became the new Fall, following the departure of Steve and the other fella. I've got his name.
Right, yeah.
Steve Trafford, yeah. So you won't know anything about that, will you? How did Mark get in touch with you?
Okay, well, can I just first off make a disclaimer that it's a little hazy, some of these memories. A little hazy.
That's quite all right.
So
you should try talking to me and Simon.
That
does get hazy.
It's a little hazy. Alcohol is funny that way, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
I never trusted Julian Cope's biography or autobiography, because it's a fantastic book, but he remembers everything.
Well, I feel like he would, though. I don't know why. I feel like he's like a psychedelic master.
Yeah.
And he could probably remember things. I, on the other hand, am an idiot. So the story goes, they were coming to America. I don't know if they had toured Fallhead's Role in America yet. I'm not sure.
I don't think so.
Okay. So it was around that time. And I mean, I can only say this from my side of it. I got a phone call from Rob Barbado, my buddy and bandmate at the time. And he asked me if I wanted to be in the Fall. And I was like, absolutely not. Just kidding. So,
What did you think of The Fall? What did you know about and think about The Fall at the time?
Oh, I was a huge fan. I grew up like with punk. Like punk music was like my first. Like punk and hip hop was like it for me, you know, like growing up, like I found like I tapped into something special. So, and I know The Fall's not a punk band, but you know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was really into them and I was into The Fall, but like most, I hadn't like cracked into like a lot of it. I was at that moment into like the early things. Singles and then records. Yeah. So I knew a little bit. So it's like, of course I want to be in it.
It's quite a safe bet that you wouldn't have been doing any of them songs in the set.
Oh my God. Well, that I've made that mistake before. Yeah.
Which ones are the first we did album?
What's that?
Which ones are the first album are we doing?
Yeah, exactly. Totally wired, right? Yeah. But we did manage to get him to play Printhead, which was cool.
Wow.
Off Dragnet, yeah. That was like, I felt like a real champion being able to do that. But,
so you said no.
I guess this. No, I said absolutely hell yes. And, I was like, it kind of felt a little surreal because I had just kind of also gotten into The Fall, like somewhat recently around then anyway. So, or become like a fan, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so I couldn't even believe it. I was so excited. And then it was like, well, we have to learn the songs in 2 days. I was like, all right.
Two whole days.
What did you do? 17 hours.
I know. I think it was two. I mean, a better story would be like one day because it felt like it was, you know, we had to cram all that information.
I'm joking.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Because they were the songs that I didn't even know. I hadn't listened to Fallhead's Roll at all, you know.
So is that what they were playing then, the stuff from Fallhead's Roll?
Pretty much, yeah. Pretty much.
Right. And how long after you joined had they dropped the whole of Fallhead's
Roll? It was kind of like immediately we did a tour with that and then he wanted to write new stuff.
Which is...
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just going to say it's pretty much unique to The Fall, isn't it? I think that.
Yeah, it just keeps on churning. It's like a grind. But I like that cuz I was up for that. You know? Cuz Rob and I feel like we have like a good work ethic when it comes to music, you know? So we were totally game to for whatever, you know?
Yeah.
We would have learned 100 songs if he asked.
I mean, by the time Reformation came out, it was only about 6 months, wasn't it? I think after you joined, if that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, we were in there quick. Yeah.
So
it was kind of exciting because every phone call would be something like that. Like, oh, we're going to the studio or we're doing this or we're doing that.
So what was the first gig like?
Oh my God, dude. Well, first, I just have to mention that I guess when the band members left Mark and Elena, the American label Narnak, they hit up one of our mutual friends, Emmett Kelly. And Emmett Kelly was the one who called Rob. It was like, the Dark of My Love guys can do it.
Yeah.
The dudes.
The dudes. You know?
So I feel like I should mention that because... I feel like Emmett Kelly was pretty important in that.
Yeah.
Getting us in there, you know? Okay. So you want to know about the first show?
Yeah.
We crammed, learned the songs, you know?
Yep.
We didn't have time to go to the record store to buy the album. So we bought it online. And that's important.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why.
Later. They didn't send them to you?
Yeah, we didn't get them sent to us. Yeah. So we learned him really, really, really fast, diligently. And so we show up. I think it was in San Diego, I think. House of Blues, of all places.
Okay.
And we first meet Elena, and she's like the sweetest thing ever. And she's just like so welcoming. And I was like, all right, this feels good. Like, you know, because it's a bit intimidating, right? Mm. And she just like melted that away, and she was just very sweet. And
she speaks very, very highly of you. We had her on the podcast.
Yeah, we did.
And I think she'll speak really highly of you lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think the same of her. She made that experience so easy. Like you could always go to her for whatever it was. And she, I don't know, just took care of everything and also just being so sweet and nice. Yeah, she's the best. I have a lot of respect for her.
Right, yeah. So I'm just looking. I'm just looking at here the set list. So you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 songs. It's not. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's not that bad, right?
Pretty good. Yeah,
10 songs. Yeah. So we meet Mark, and I make the mistake of going because I'm like 27, 28, maybe 27, and I make the mistake of saying, oh, Mark, thank you, you know, for this opportunity. Like, I'm a huge fan.
Oh.
And, and he said, enough with the fucking ass kissing, go soundcheck. very scary. But it was so unlike any other musical person or experience I've had, because everyone seems to be generally pleasant, you know?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It was so real like that, and almost like the legend is real.
Yeah.
That I wasn't scared or mad or anything. I thought it was cool. I was like, fuck yeah. You know? he's a man about his business.
Yes.
You know, let's do this.
I mean, you knew exactly what you're getting into, I suppose, did you?
I didn't really. I like, because like I was saying, like, you know, you hear about people, musicians, and then you think they're this thing, and then you meet them, and they're just like, oh, you're just like a nice person, whatever, you know?
Yes.
The mystery's gone. But he had that for sure in spades, man. Yeah.
To be fair to him, it was quite a brave thing to do. You know, most people would have cancelled that tour, wouldn't they?
Oh, you mean like say, like talking that shit to me, like we could have walked or something?
No, I mean just like most people, if the band had walked out, they would have cancelled the whole tour. They would not have carried on with it.
Oh yeah, I thought that was cool.
I mean, they didn't even miss a gig, did they?
No, we did it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think they did two and then the group left, yeah.
Oh, no, so they did miss a gig. Phoenix, apparently, was cancelled. So one gig.
Oh, right, okay. yeah, one gig. I liked it for a couple of reasons that they did that. One, that's just like, fuck it, we're doing it. And then two, it's like, yeah, why miss out on, like, touring, making money? Because I don't think The Fall had been there for a minute.
No.
In the States. Yeah. So it's like, shit, we got here.
Yes. Let's
do this, you know?
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I respected that hustle.
Oh yeah. Got it. I mean, similar in a way. I don't, one likes to cast these kind of comparisons, but there was another occasion when most of his band left, Steve, wasn't there? And he just carried on.
It is stirring up memories, I must admit.
Was it you, Steve?
We were at the end of the tour.
But there still wasn't much of a gap. It was similar circumstances, though, wasn't it? Although, yeah. The other band didn't think to play it out on stage, did they?
No.
What era was this?
So you're going to have to tell the tale now, Steve. 1998?
Yeah, 1998.
It's gone very quiet, to be honest.
It's gone very quiet. 1998, that's when I left, when we had a similar altercation on stage at Brownies in New York.
Oh, I've seen the vid, yeah.
As in everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is interesting because you're kind of the opposite way around, aren't you? So
yes, did
Mark say much to you, Tim, about the previous band, or did he?
No, he wouldn't even mention their names.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was done. You mean the band that just left?
Yes.
Them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was not happy about them.
Okay. I can imagine he wasn't. No.
Yeah. But just real quick, so we played the show, and because we bought the album on iTunes, I think, something happened where they got two songs mixed up. Like it was the wrong title on the song. So when
Mountain
Energy. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like whoever mastered it, maybe like didn't do it right or something. And so when that song came on the set list, we played the wrong song.
Brilliant.
But he was a trooper though. Yeah. He rolled with it. It was cool.
I was going to say, did anyone notice?
Well,
did he notice?
I remember hearing later that David Yao from the Jesus Lizard was at the show, and someone told me that he said it was the worst show he's ever seen.
Wow. Thanks, mate.
So I think it went pretty good.
Yeah. He obviously wasn't at Brownies then.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I don't know. Coming from him, weirdly, it feels like a compliment. I don't know.
So I presume
that was the first show.
So Mark didn't know about Dark of My Love, or was he?
No, he didn't really know. He didn't know us, no, or of us or anything.
So
we were just kind of
thrown in.
Yeah.
So did you play? There's a thing. Did you play the same set every night? Then pretty much you can't have varied much, I don't suppose.
Yeah, it was pretty much the same set for that first tour.
And how long was the tour?
Oh, God, I can't remember.
It's not short.
It was decent.
No,
it was full states, I think.
Yeah,
except for like the South.
We're in Kansas, we're in Minneapolis, we're in Chicago.
Yeah. So West Coast to the East Coast. Yeah.
Brooklyn.
Well, I really miss touring America. I really do.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't always. It wasn't exactly plain sailing, though, was it?
No, never. But it is a great thing to do.
Yeah, of course.
And maybe probably for you guys, like the mystique of the Americas, maybe a little bit. Because I had that going to the UK.
I mean, the thing about that was, certainly when I went with the Fall, it wasn't like you could see it. Because it wasn't like, you couldn't just watch things on YouTube or, the only thing you got really was TV.
Yeah.
So what did you do? So you came over then, so you played Manchester by the June. You were in England. So when you joined when you were offered the position, would you like to join the Fall?
Yeah.
Was that
right?
Would you like to do this tour, or was that, would you like to join the Fall?
No, it was never, would you like to join the Fall? It felt like we were filling in for this one tour, and we were cool with that. You know?
Of course.
Like, So I just thought it was going to be that tour. And then we kind of bonded with Mark and Elena.
Yeah.
We just got along, and we were, like I was saying earlier, we were so game. We would have jumped at anything, he said.
Yeah.
It was a funny dynamic when I think about it now.
Yeah. Because it's an interesting one, because from our point of view, so me and Steve, we know Steve Trafford pretty well. And it sounds horrific when he tells a story,
Oh, I bet, yeah.
Yeah, and then 2 days later, you join, and it's absolutely fantastic. But it's the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting one, isn't it, about, where the truth is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I wonder if it had anything to do with, you know, we were young.
Yeah.
Younger than probably a lot of the people he played with, or maybe closer to his age, maybe, or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that had anything. I don't know. He, I don't want to say he was like a father figure, because that's, but he kind of was in a weird way.
I think that, you know? if you speak to Kieran and Pete Greenway, I think he was definitely a father figure to them.
Okay, good. Since they've said it, I fully stand by what I said.
Permission.
Yeah. You know, or a drunk uncle you love, you know?
Yeah.
But also a drill sergeant. I was thinking
the father figure stretching it a bit, but yeah, I think.
Yeah. Well, how about in just musical terms? Maybe not in real life.
Yeah.
Musical terms, yeah.
Yeah.
But we also got on music taste wise, like, because Rob and I were heavily into Beefheart at the time.
Yeah.
And I think learning those songs and learning how it went with Mark,
mm-hmm.
It was like, oh shit, we can kind of flex that muscle of a little bit of like kind of being a little free and improv-y, you know, as long as it has a good rhythm to it and it repeats, like, just you can kind of go nuts. And so I think our little Beefheart bones were like, oh, this is so fun, you know, and Mark liked that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we knew he liked Can.
So I was just about to bring up Can because I was going to talk about the song Reformation, which you know, you get full songs that are songs just about, and then you get full songs that are riffs that you can take somewhere. Right, but Reformation isn't even quite a riff, is it?
It's just a bass line, basically.
I mean, that's really canny, isn't it? Uncanny, if you'll pardon me.
Yeah.
And what I was going to ask, that's really, you can really hear Can in that, and that sort of motoric kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So is that the kind of stuff you were playing before?
Well, I mean, that was our influences at that very moment.
You were kind of lo-fi as well, so that would have suited Mark, wouldn't it? There's not a lot of studio artifice going on, is there?
Yeah. Yeah, I think we kind of shared references like that, and he knew everything, you know, like, and like bonding on like 60s garage stuff too.
Yeah.
And we just had a good time with all that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of perfect timing.
Yeah. I'm going to say, it sounds like he sort of chanced upon the perfect musicians.
Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of.
Apart from the fact that they live 7,000 miles away, there's...
Well, I suppose that didn't help.
Yeah.
So you came over then? You came over then in what, the middle of June?
Yeah. Okay, I believe you.
I'm just fascinated to work out what the plan was then. So obviously you get in, you're going to do this tour, and that works out great, better than anybody thought it was going to do. And then I presume Mark wanted to keep you on.
Because things went well. And because it being Mark too, he just, because we were such good little soldiers, I think he was like, right, I got a band, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But go on. Sorry.
No. I'm just fascinated to think what was the pitch to get you to come over to the UK? Then was that like do it for 6 weeks? Do it for 6 months? Open ended.
Oh, I don't. I think it was open ended. I don't even. It was like, hey, we have this tour. We could fly you guys out.
Right.
And we were super into it. Of course, you know. It's like.
Yeah.
Sounds fun, you know.
Did you do a UK tour then?
Yeah, I think it was. Do you have
I've got the dates here. Yeah, so there's a UK tour there, including some festivals, and then the other thing is there's kind of like a handing over, isn't there? Where you sort of gradually over sort of 5 dates in London, you kind of hand over to the new band.
Oh, was it that early?
Oh, man, unless I've missed a year, I don't think so.
Oh,
Oh, I've brought you right down there, haven't you? You're out already. Sorry, I didn't mean that.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for the interview.
Right, see you then.
All right. Nice one.
I think I have missed some time because there's an album in there as well, isn't there? Let's face it.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember how soon. That must have been really soon.
So you kind of
up in Manchester.
Yeah.
What's that?
You kind of overlapped with the Imperial Wax lineup, didn't you?
Well, we had Dave the Eagle on a lot of the shows, playing double. We had two bass players.
Wow.
So we had him for a while, and then I think Pete was later.
Right.
And I think he came on stage a couple times before Rob, I, and Orfeo left.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was like training wheels or something. Yeah.
I must say that Rob is the only guy who's ever been in the Fall who can get away with having a beard.
Oh my God, I know. I know. I was wondering about that. No problem. I think Mark liked it. I think he said, yeah, he liked his vibe. He liked Rob's look.
Cool. I don't think anybody's going up to Rob and saying, shave that beard off, to be honest.
I've never met the guy,
but I don't get the impression that people are telling him to shave his beard off very often.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's also, at the same time, the nicest person in the world, so.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's a bass player.
I love that. Yeah, right, yeah. But everyone else, he was like, go get a fucking haircut, shave, do all this, put this fucking shirt on.
Yes.
You know? And but he didn't say shit to Rob.
Funny that, yeah. Well, there's something on, I don't know if you've ever seen this Fall gigography. It's an amazing tool, but it's got like snippets of what Mark says on stage. And
no way.
Yeah, for the first gig. He keeps talking about somebody in cream shorts. I don't know if that was somebody in the band, was it?
No. Oh, that's good, though.
Yeah, yeah. There's some crackers.
Yeah, he used to say shit on... Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to look that up, because he would say things that had me and Rob busting up.
Yeah. Because when I first started watching The Fall, was really fairly early. It was kind of part of the act then, the way he interacted with the audience. And there's like that, are you doing what you were doing 2 years ago? Yeah, well, don't make a career out of it and stuff like that. But he thought it was detracting from his, so he kind of stopped then for a long time.
Oh, right.
He was brilliant.
What was the early banter like then?
With the audience?
Yeah.
I think it was basically him showing how much more intelligent he was than the idiots who were spitting, and because it was kind of that when The Fall first started.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he could cut people to bits from the stage if he wanted to. But funny, you know.
Yeah, like a clever, intelligent way. Yeah.
So where are we? So you're now over in England. So how long did you think you were going to be able to do it for? You can't have been making that much money out of it.
I mean, we were making more than we've ever had with music. So we were good.
Oh, wow.
Mark was pretty fair with that too. He was good with money.
Right.
And it was funny too, because he'd give it all in cash and we'd be like, fuck, how do we get this home? You know, do we have to declare it? I literally I had like a parka and I cut the inseam of it and stashed all the cash in my parka, because I was afraid like the airport agents or whatever were going to...
It's funny you should say that. I've had a guy from the IRS on today. He wanted to know when I told him you were coming on. I've had a guy from the IRS on today. He wants to speak to you.
Oh, yeah. Did I just fucking incriminate myself? This is all... I allegedly
cut a hole in you. We've all been there.
Yeah.
The statute of limitations must have gone by now, surely.
Yeah. 5 years.
Yeah.
But it was the most money both like Rob and I, and maybe Orfeo, like had made with music. So we were just stoked, you know.
Well, so Orfeo wasn't in Dark of My Love, was he?
No, no. He was one of Rob's buddies from college, I think, in Boston. And yeah.
But you kind of, you gelled with him really well as well, didn't you?
Yeah, he's a fucking awesome drummer. Yeah. So that was easy. I mean, that's why Rob called him too. You know, he knew that he could learn it quick and just be into anything.
Yeah.
You know.
So where did you record? See, I was getting trouble with them. People who know everything about The Fall. Where did you record? Was it in England or was it in the US?
It was at Tim Gracieland's place.
Okay.
Do you know him?
I don't. I feel like I should get a name like that.
I want to say, oh my God, I might be getting a little bit confused here. Well, I know that we did it at like Lisa Stanfield's. What's that? Oh my God, what's her?
Lisa Stanfield, yeah.
Yeah.
No, Gracieland's.
Gracieland's.
Gracie Fields. You won't know Gracie Fields, I don't suppose. But Gracie Fields was like a 40s, 50s singer from Rochdale. Had a bit of a film career.
Oh, okay.
So obviously Gracieland's is a pull on Gracieland's, but it was Gracie Fields.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Did she do the White Cliffs of Dover?
No.
Is that Lisa Stanford?
No. Well, hang on. The White Cliffs of Dover is... Oh, what's her bloody name? Can't think. But anyway, Gracie Fields is the biggest aspidistra in the world.
Oh, that's her, yeah.
And okay. Sally, this must mean a lot to you, this, Tim. Me and Steve passing for Gracie Fields. So anyway, there you are in Rochdale.
Rochdale. That must have been a bit of a... I mean, we did a lot of albums in Rochdale.
At did
Sweet
you?
16 and Cargo Studios.
Which was the same place.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Was it the same? No, it wouldn't be the same as...
It's not the same as Gracie Fields.
No.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean, if talking in terms of cultural shock, from
yeah, that's what I'm
saying. Venice Beach to Rochdale must be quite the cultural shock, I think.
Well, just being in the UK was a bit of a culture shock. And especially, and I mean this because I love the North, like, but when we first got there, that was a different type of people, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when we didn't know, you know, because like people in the, you know, London, whatever, they're pretty easygoing in that way that sometimes seems a bit... like too much, like, mm-hmm. And we're used to that being from LA and wherever in the States. So we, you know, that just feels natural. But go, and then our first experiences in like Manchester and stuff, it's like, oh shit! Like we, I'll put it to you this way: like someone might call me a fucking pussy, a nice haircut or whatever, you know. And then, you know, my first instinct is to be like, oh shit. Yeah, you're right, you know?
Yeah.
But then I got so sick of that I stuck up for myself and, you know, I told him to fuck off. And then we were best friends.
Yes. That's how we make friends in the North.
Yeah, that's how we make friends And then I learned to really appreciate that. And I fucking love it. I love Manchester. I love the Northern people.
Great, because you've been back a few times now, haven't you? With various,
I have. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
but what's cool is that. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, go on. You can't.
Oh, because he put us up in a hotel while we were recording. I think we were. It was like kind of like a satellite base where we would go do shows, come back, have a week off, do some recording.
Yeah.
Stuff like, or I feel like that was the thing. I could be wrong, but either way, we spent like a month in Manchester and learned to really love it.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic.
Yeah, but also I can't remember. We may have done some of the early recording in the States first before we brought it to the UK. And I can't remember which came first.
It doesn't matter. It's not, Wikipedia, is it? We can make it up as we go along. That's what we normally do.
Yeah, let's make it up. But the recording thing was
when you were recording, was that with Mark or just on your own in the States?
Well, that's the funny thing because, okay, so we were definitely in the States and then he's like, oh, by the way, we're going to be recording a record in like 2 days. So again, with the like 2 day thing. So me and Rob are like, fuck, we need to write songs, you know? So we got together and just jammed out shit and brought it to Mark in the studio.
And he liked it.
He did. Yeah. He liked, yeah, he was good like that.
Yeah.
I mean, he had his input, but we didn't know what he was talking about. So. He'd flare his arms around like he was playing guitar. Do it more like this. I'm like, what?
Play it like a snake.
Cool. Yeah, play it like a snake.
A few notes out, I'll bet.
Yeah. But that was a cool experience because I'd been like writing music, but in such a song way.
Yes.
So that type of freedom... felt it was fun. It just it's felt great, like jamming. Yeah. And you can just repeat it and just let Mark fucking freestyle rap over it.
Yeah, because we've kind of got back into that now. Because we were in a band with Bricks, me and Steve, and that was all songs. And Steve Shafford as well, funnily enough, and that was all songs, which is fine and it's a good discipline and it's interesting. But sometimes when you just say, "I've got these two notes, can we play this for the next 8 minutes?" It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the type of trip me and Rob are on anyway. So it was so perfect.
Yeah, because it's a great album, that Reformation.
I know, I like it. I remember thinking at the time, I wish we had more time to write, you know, between me and Rob.
Yeah.
But I also like that it was kind of just an express hurry up and do it kind of thing, just off the top of your head.
Yeah. That's exactly how we're working now. We've got with House of All. Yeah. That's all. We are, you know, we're going to limit the time you've got deliberately for no other good reason other than see what happens when you've only got this amount of time. And it's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's fucking cool. It's super interesting, you know, and actually this question to you two, but what was that? Was it similar early on? Like how do you come up with a song like the classical, you know? Like, are you just riffing?
The classical was we had a rehearsal place by the time we did the classical. So the stuff on Hex is about half and half. Some of it's kind of made up, not quite on the spot. Well, one of them at least is made up on the spot. Iceland, the song was made up on the spot.
Oh, right. That's right, yeah.
And then some of them were a bit more well-known.
I can't remember about the classical. Was it...
There's a really good book, actually, Steve. If you wanted to read how the classical was written, there's a book that's all
described. I'll be able to get around to reading that. But did somebody have the riff first? Did Craig have the riff first?
If you ask Mark, he has his riff first. And if you ask Craig, he had his riff first. So
reading that book wasn't just no didn't shine a light on it.
Well, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Tim can't remember what happened in 1996. This was 1982.
Yeah.
You're lucky I can remember the name. Yeah. But yeah, so the thing about the fall is if you look at there's time enough there to write every possible conceivable way of writing a song or not writing a song, isn't there?
Yeah. In that amount of time. We did everything, didn't we?
Yeah. One person wrote ideas. People had riffs. People had no riffs. I'm sure it must have worked the same for you, Tim.
It was exactly the same. Yeah. I mean, because speaking of like Reformation, the song, Rob just was doing that bass line and then, you know, and that was it. And yeah, for like 6 minutes. And then, yeah, it could be as simple as that, you know.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask about the video like, for that.
My favorite. Oh, fuck, yeah.
Anyway, what was your favorite, sorry?
Oh, my favorite one was, I stand by Fall Sound, that song. I really love that one.
I mean, Matt must have liked it for him to call it that, mustn't he?
Yeah, that was cool. I like his lyrics, too.
Yeah.
I was proud of that one. Mm-hmm. But, the video, that was funny.
It's great. Because the thing about fall videos, if you're taking them as a piece, they're all rubbish. They're not all, well, that's not.
That's no way. They're
no,
cool.
That isn't. No, I mean, I'm talking about my time here.
No way. That was the best.
Yeah, the North's quite good.
Hit the North good. Is all right, yeah.
Eat Yourself Fitter is great.
Jesus.
Is it
well, it's let's say, I don't know how would one describe it. It's not exactly high end, is it?
It's not high end, is it?
No. I'll tell you the thing about Eat Yourself Fitter was Mark did like a storyboard for it, and I don't think.
Oh really?
I don't think he quite figured out just how much material you need for a song of that length.
Right.
So there's so much padding in it.
I love it though.
That was all in the Hacienda. That was
one of my favorites.
That was all filmed in the Hacienda.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Crazy.
Because that's cool. There's a guy called, what was his name? Malcolm, who used to, because the interesting thing about the Hacienda was, or one of the many interesting things, it was a bit like, you know, First Avenue in Minneapolis, where that was the first place I ever saw where they filmed the band, they videoed the band while you were on stage.
Okay, yeah.
And then showed it, you know, showed it in different bits of the club. So they did that in the Hacienda, and there was a gal called Malcolm who, he was like in charge of the film. So they got him to make Eat Yourself Fitter and Kick a Conspiracy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I've seen a lot of videos from, live videos from the Hacienda Gun Club. And,
yeah,
he did all those, didn't he?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
And there's one I saw, I was going to ask you about. Johnny Thunders. Mm-hmm. Johnny Thunders played the Hacienda with Mark Ryan in the Creeper Sports. So I was going to ask about your version.
No way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your version, you can't put your hands on the memory. A fantastic version.
That's a great song. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. What did you want to know?
Sorry. I just wanted to know what made you. Were you a big fan of Johnny Thunders? Or did you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was like my hero.
Did you ever see him?
No.
You're too young, aren't you?
Not old. I was too young for that, yeah.
Yeah, because he played the Hacienda.
The closest I got was... Yeah, that's... what year was that?
That would have been... So it was... Would have been 86, maybe? Something like that. 85, 86. Maybe slightly earlier than that. Not maybe for 84, but certainly between 84 and 86, I think. But he was great. And, I don't think they were the healthiest bunch, the Heartbreakers, at that point.
I know. I feel like part of the thing to seeing him, though, is just to, like, see it on stage. You know, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Look at that thing.
Well, it was a bit like that with Jeffrey Lee Pierce as well. He was like a sort of...
Oh.
The Gun, you mentioned the Gun Club, didn't you? He was another one. He was like like a force of nature.
Yeah, yeah. I fucking love the Gun Club.
Yeah. We've got, hopefully, we've got Kid Congo Powers coming on soon.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in the video for Hit the North, actually. Now, we must remember asking about that last day.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I gotta rewatch that.
There's all that. If you go on the Fall website, I think it's been put to bed now, but if you go on the Fall website, there's like pages and pages of who's that guy? Who's that little guy in the video for, you know, the speculation?
Oh, funny.
Is it this? I've got this picture of someone stood next to Mark in 1978 and I've reversed it and drawn some glasses on him, and I think that might be him. That's the nature of the Fall website. If you find yourself with 5 days to spare, you can dip yourself in there. There's all sorts in there.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Rick's famous quote was when we're doing that Hit the North video was one of these people looks like a rock star.
Yes,
and it was
Kid Congo.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never much taken with the Victoria video.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Too much money.
Too much money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's like a proper video, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Video.
Yeah. It's like a proper video. It isn't doing it any favours, I don't think.
I could think of better ways of spending £30,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a fairly low budget. Well, not low, but for a chart record, 30,000 wasn't.
At the time, it was fairly low budget. Yeah, but that was, yeah.
Oh yeah, it would be, huh?
Yeah.
Fuck videos. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I can't. Well, I'm sure some people do, but your average video now, I reckon, would cost considerably less than your average video then.
Yeah. Yeah, then it was camera crews and film crews and all.
Two blocks on a phone now, isn't it?
Like 20 people involved.
Yeah. Just iPhones now.
Yeah. So what was the nature of your departure then? Was it just too impractical to keep going, was it?
Because we really like had a bond with Mark and Elena.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'd send us Christmas cards and, you know, all of that. And so we were like buddies, you know,
mm-hmm.
And we had a couple pretty like funny moments on tour, you know, the kind of stuff where it's just like, oh, I love them, you know, and mm-hmm. they love us.
Yeah.
And so I think it was just impractical. Like he's having to fly us out all the time, that costs a lot of money, and yeah, he needed a UK band,
mm-hmm.
I think. Yeah, but I did return though.
Yeah,
for a tour.
Yeah,
so I was like, I felt like I was on call.
Yes,
you know, and Rob was too. Actually, Rob came back. So
he didn't leave on bad terms, then.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I don't think you could have left on better terms, could you?
No.
What's that?
I don't think you could have left on better terms, really, could you?
It was kind of perfect. Because Rob and I had a band, too, and we kind of wanted to get back to that, mm-hmm. you know.
What band was that? That wasn't Dark of My Love by then, was it?
No, it still was, yeah. It was towards the end of that band. But, right. But yeah.
So you got back to that? Yeah.
Got back to that. But we stayed in contact with Mark and Elena. I even wrote a few songs, sent them songs that were on a couple albums mm-hmm. after.
Because it's interesting that, because the whole kind of dynamic changed. Because obviously there was the dudes, your iteration, and then the Imperial Wax, and you never fell out with any of them either. So
no, I love those guys.
This is really nice to hear that somebody's had a good experience being in the fall.
Well, seriously though, people are shocked when I say like, no, he's my buddy, dude.
Yeah, well, I see.
And you know, it's funny. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No, you carry on.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I remember when, you know, the Fallen, that book.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember that was being talked about. And Mark told me specifically, like, don't talk to them. You're not an ex-member. And I remember being like, oh, shit. Okay.
Ah, right. You know? Okay. Well, that's nice, like, though, isn't it?
That's, I know. Yeah. It made me feel good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's interesting that, because one of the reasons for doing this podcast was to kind of kick against this theory that being in the fall was like the most miserable place on earth, and it was even Mark was terrible all the time. Yeah, I mean, that's clearly not your experience.
It was the most it was the most extreme musical moment of my life. I mean, he's a force, you know.
Yeah,
and he could be nasty, but also like, whatever, at least, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I liked it. I really liked it, and especially we got to a point where, you know, he could bitch us out after a gig in the backstage room, say like, you fucking sucked, you did this. And then I remember one night I was like, fuck you, it's your band, like, I don't give a fuck. You know.
And
ever since that moment we were like,
I do think twinsies. This, I think that unless you were in there, unless you're involved and you're in there, you don't really understand what it was about.
Yeah, it's high.
It's something anxiety. Else.
It's high stakes. Yeah, everything feels like high stakes. Yeah,
it's nice to talk to people who've experienced it.
It's like a self-help group. This podcast.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. It is.
Unless you were there. Carl Burns, obviously the original drummer, Carl Burns used to say that to me a lot. So unless you were there and you're involved in it, you don't understand what it's about.
No, no, that's right.
No, you don't. And also, I noticed that his energy, you start to kind of gravitate towards it and you become prickly. I mean, it's like a fucking gang. I felt like I was in a gang. And when I would come home, I would have that edge, you know, like if someone looked at me sideways, Like you just had, it just had this weird mesmerizing spell on you.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Cause I'm not like a violent person, but fuck, man. I mean, it's like going into the military or something, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
It's that kind of thing. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I think Steve did it for too long. I don't think it's healthy to do it for as long as Steve did.
No.
Yeah.
You're 20 years of it. He's not.
Yeah.
I've always said that. You stay too long. Yeah. It was like the Shawshank Redemption by the end of it. You know, you get completely institutionalized.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Shawshank Redemption without the tunnel.
How was that
from? You were in it for a very long time.
Yeah.
But I'm curious because I got that era marked, right? But you probably had. Was he the same? You know, like what? From when he was younger to
he was probably well. In Paul's time and in sort of early my time, he was probably a lot better.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I used to think that he's kicking off about something. Okay, he's got a point. And then by the end of it, he was like, he's kicking off about something. Well, when he hasn't got a point about this.
So, like I said, I think the relationship had gone about as far as it could with you and Mark, hadn't it?
Yeah. Somebody said about that Brownies gig, the last gig, that this looks like four people who've hate each other and spent too much time together.
Yeah. That's probably a fair.
The thing you wouldn't want to do at that point is go off and form a band with three of them. But that's another story. So we've got 52 minutes here, Tim, and we've not touched on any other part of your massive and illustrious career. We've not talked about White Fence. We've not talked about drinks. Any of that?
Oh, yeah.
So, any plans to go back to any of them?
It seems bad that you're not doing music, man.
It does. It's terrible.
I know. I hate it, but also I'm good with it.
If I can, after all I've been through, I can do it. You can.
That's true. Yeah.
I did 3 gigs last week.
Hey,
you want a medal?
Yes, I do want a medal. Thank you very much.
Southampton joiners. Thank you very much.
That's a long way.
What happened?
You're talking about a man. You're talking about a man who lived in California and travelled over to Rochdale to record, and you're saying it was a long way to go to Southampton for the gig.
Same thing. It's the same.
They got that fan to buy a newspaper.
Psychologically, it was.
Yeah, I bet.
you make it sound great, Steve. So, we'll have you back on, Tim, when you can come on and talk about your new album.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I will get around to it. Clock's ticking. I promise.
We're on the last series here, so you're going to have to pull your tripod.
Oh, is it?
I don't know.
So Tim, you know the paint. So you're painting.
Yeah.
So are you selling them, or is it just
I had a
oh, an art show the other night. It was a group show, but yeah, I'm kind of taking it more serious. I don't know. I know.
Oh, man, as you guys would say,
I don't know. Fuck all with that world. Yeah. But I don't know. I just like doing it. It's like,
that's great.
Well, fuck, after 30 years in the fall, you should start painting.
It's quite often. It was 20 years. It was 20. It's quite often.
After 50 years in the fall, you could...
116 years in the fall. Yeah. He can paint. He did his back, he did your back room the other week, didn't you, Steve?
Yeah, I did a bit of emotion. Oh, in the room.
Nice.
Right. I think our hour's coming to an end, Tim.
That's been an absolute pleasure.
Just an hour.
It's an hour. Yeah. We try and keep it to an hour.
Well, I have to say that you guys, I'm a big fan.
Thank you very much.
Both of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's not get too self-congratulatory, but you know.
I know, but I just wanted you to know it.
Thank you. No, that's much appreciated. Thank you.
Great story. Really.
Great to speak to you, yeah. So as I say,
yeah, really great. Yeah,
yeah. Put that bleeding paintbrush down and get your plectrum in your hand.
I know. I will.
Okay,
let's
mate. Let's have some more music now. Yeah. Okay. Well, no, I'm only joking. If you want to paint, you paint, mate. You do what you like.
Okay, thank you.
All right, mate. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Great to speak to you.
Yeah,
thanks,
good to speak to you too.
Cheers, Tim.
Yeah.
Good night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks for joining us for this week's Old Brother. Episodes released every 2 weeks, so keep an eye out for episode 5 coming soon. You can find us on Spotify and Apple and all the usual suspects, and we're hosted at shows.acast.com/old-brother. Huge thanks to Tim. Hopefully it won't be too long before we hear new sound from him in one form or another. As for us, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Old Brother Show to keep up with all the latest news. And don't forget to like or give us a rating on your favourite platform. You can even tell your friends about us if you like. And remember, if you're driving, take your car. Ta-da.
Avant que vous n'écoutiez votre podcast, Acast nous permet de vous présenter le nôtre, Speakeasy by Influx. Chaque semaine, trois entrepreneurs partagent leur expérience autour d'un verre. Ils discutent d'entrepreneuriat, de productivité et de créativité. On a donné des conseils pour gérer l'échec, discuté de l'importance de prendre des décisions rapides, de l'intelligence artificielle dans le travail et des 30 leçons de vie que vous n'apprendrez qu'à 30 ans. Manuel Diaz, Romain Lanéry et moi-même, Léo Duff, ne sommes jamais d'accord sur ces sujets, donc on est sûr que vous aimerez au moins l'un d'entre nous et détesterez les deux autres. Allez, on vous sert un verre, à tout de suite dans Speakeasy by Influx.